This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
All membership drive runs from October 14th through November 7th right here at 120 Wall Street, 10th floor. To become a volunteer to answer phones during the drive, call Vera in advance at 212-209-2826. So your name can be entered in the security computer. See you during the drive.
That's the promo you played?
I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was. And you can dance to it.
Yeah.
In the spirit of a free and fair exchange of information and ideas, I'd like to ask just two questions.
There are rumors about people of color being purged from the Pacifica network, but if you walk into this station, you will no doubt note that a large majority of the people here are people of color.
My job as general manager is to eliminate all of the stress and violence.
Important issues are coming before the WBAI local station board and will be addressed at the next LSB meeting on Wednesday, October 14th at 7 p.m. at the Judson Memorial Church Assembly Hall, 239 Thompson Street, between West 3rd and Washington Square South. Take the ACE, F, or V train to West 4th Street or the number 1 train to Christopher Street. The location is wheelchair accessible. Again, that's Wednesday, October 14th at 7 p.m. at the Judson Memorial Church Assembly Hall, 239 Thompson Street.
And we're hoping now that we're reaching towards some financial stability and an atmosphere that encourages participation, that we can do more and more.
Be there, but you might want to bring your football helmet. This is listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York City. It is 1 minute after 12 midnight, which means that, theoretically, it's time for this. this. Hello. Thank you. Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
ਧਰਤੀ ਪੰਜਾਬ ਦੀ ਜਿੱਥੇ ਮੇਰੇ ਵੀਰ ਭੈਣਾਂ ਬਜ਼ੁਰਗ ਵਸ ਰਹੇ ਨੇ ਆਪਣੀ ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਮਾਂ ਬੋਲੀ ਨੂੰ ਕਾਇਮ ਰੱਖਣ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਪਿਛੋਕੜ ਨੂੰ ਸਦਾ ਯਾਦ ਰੱਖੋ ਅਸੀਂ ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਤੇ ਸਾਡਾ ਦਿਲ ਵੀ
I'm
All right. Exotic sounds of New York City. Yeah. That was from a disc called Evolution, Bhangra Meets Hip Hop, by Amin Pabla in collaboration with Pavit Sethi. Now, I'm not sure. There's two guys who are shown on the cover of this disc, one of them looking very Punjabi, wearing a turban, and the other looking very African-American with dreadlocks. Not sure which one is Amin Pabla and which one is Pavit Sethi, but the name of that cut was Asihan Punjabi. And I don't know what the Asihan means, but the Punjabi is rather obvious. I picked this up at the Diwali celebration on 74th Street in Jackson Heights, which I attended this Sunday. And, wow, what a great time I had. I have to say it was the one day that I have really enjoyed since I've been back from Peru. Now, 2 weeks and change that I've been back from Peru, the first day that I really enjoyed. It's kind of been a bit of a downer to be back. I'll have more to say about that later. We're going to hear more from Evolution, Bhangra Meets Hip Hop. I have to say, this sounds more like Bhangra than hip hop to me. I'm not hearing the hip hop here. Maybe a little bit of rapping going on, but it's got much more of a Bhangra feel to my ear. Maybe some of you Bhangra heads out there will take issue with me and tell me that this is not the pure stuff, that it's got some hybridization going on. But well, we'll hear more of it. In fact, I think the next cut we'll play shortly is one of the ones which has got more of an explicit hip hop feel to it. You know, I grew up in Jackson Heights, as a lot of you know, and, you know, it's really wonderful to see how the whole scene out there just sort of blossomed over the past 30 years, whatever it's been, since I moved out. More than 30 years now, my goodness. You know, I mean, the Diwali celebration was really, really special. Great music, great food, and just a really, really spirited. I found out that, you know, probably I would say a majority of the folks, you know, the Indo-Pakistani folks who live around that 74th Street strip are Punjabis. Because whenever somebody from the stage said, "Any Punjabis out there?" the whole place would just explode. And there was one really, really great singer. The music was really, really good. There was one really great singer who was Bengali. And she said, "Any Bengalis out there?" And hardly anybody responded. I felt sorry for her. And then she said, "How about Punjabis?" And the whole place exploded again. So here's a big shout out to all of you Jackson Heights Punjabis out there who are listening tonight. And you Bengalis, too, although I think you're outnumbered. So, you know, and what really made it good is because what really made it a good experience for me is to actually see something good happening in New York City, to actually see something which is, you know, to see authentic culture, something which is, you know, growing and thriving and is a real, you know, authentic community scene, and not something which has just become a, you know, mediated simulacrum of culture for the yuppie class, which is increasingly what is taking over in this city. And one of the unpleasant surprises that I came back to is that the last one of my local Puerto Rican or Dominican owned bodegas in my stretch of the East Village, basically the area around 2nd Avenue and 4th Street, has closed. And now there is no other place. There used to be, you know, when I first moved in, there were several 20 years ago. It's going to be the 20th anniversary of me living on East 4th Street coming up in mere weeks. I moved in the week that the Berlin Wall came down. So We're coming right up on the 20th anniversary here. Might have to do some special programming around that. In fact, we're doing it tonight. maybe we'll do some programming around the 20th anniversary of the Berlin Wall coming down in November. But tonight we're doing the special anniversary programming of me, 20 years living on East 4th Street. When I moved in, well, for starters, when I moved in, my block was, you know, this deserted post-industrial zone with tumbleweeds blowing down the middle of the street, and you had to worry about burglaries and so on, and car break-ins, and commercial space downstairs from me was this long abandoned tool and die shop, and the Bowery Bar on the corner, which, you know, used to be this fashionable night spot with all the paparazzi hanging out during its glory days, but now is a mere, you know, bridge and tunnel kind of scene. You know, that was an abandoned gas station when I moved in. But the good thing about the neighborhood was that there were several, bodegas where you could just, you know, pop in and get, a pound of lentils or habichuelas or whatnot for, back then, 20 years ago, it was probably 50 cents. Now it's, or less, 25 cents maybe. Now, you know, the last place just closed where I could get a pound of lentils for a dollar. The last place in my neighborhood where, not in the East Village in a greater sense, but in my immediate, you know, easy walking distance neck of the East Village, the last place where you could get a, you know, the few block radius there, where you could get a pound of lentils for a buck. Now there just isn't anymore. And it's been replaced by an overpriced yuppie restaurant, which, you know, looks pretty much identical to all of the other overpriced yuppie restaurants, which have just proliferated, you know, like mushrooms after the rain in this area in the last several years. Gee, that's really creative. I mean, talk about thinking outside the box. Just what the East Village needs. Another overpriced yuppie restaurant. We don't have enough of those. Hello? I thought there's supposed to be a recession. Whatever happened to the recession? Where's the recession when we need it? You know, why is the last bodega where I could get a pound of lentils for a dollar closed to be replaced by yet another overpriced yuppie restaurant? You know, haven't they figured out that there's a recession on and they've sort of like, you know, oversaturated the market for overpriced yuppie restaurants? Well, I guess they haven't, you know. I mean, evidently they haven't. I don't know what all those yuppies out there are doing for money. But they've obviously got it to burn. All of these restaurants are full every night while I'm, you know, living on lentils. Okay, so, you know, I can still go to the, the C-Town grocery, little supermarket place, which is actually owned by NYU, and they were getting ready to evict it. So looks like we're going to lose that for a while, although I am told we've won that struggle now. So I can go there and wait on a longer line to pay 59 cents more for my pound of lentils. It's not the worst thing in the world, I suppose, but it's indicative of, you know, the changes in New York City. The city is changing and is becoming less and less, the place that I know and love, and becoming more and more, you know, this, surreal, sterilized simulacrum of its former self. And all of these, I was really hoping that the recession or depression or whatever it is. I guess it's a recession and not a depression, because I was really hoping that whatever it is, it was going to put a halt to, the big monstrosity high rise that they're building directly across the street from me, and it hasn't. So I guess that means it's a recession and not a depression, because back in 1929, as we all know, you know, famously, all of the construction around the city ground to a halt. So, you know, I was hoping that was going to be the silver lining on the cloud of the depression a year ago, when it looked like the financial system was actually headed towards actual collapse. But, you know, even that hasn't happened. So it looks like we're getting the best, the worst of both worlds. It looks like it's having the worst possible effect of, you know, driving out of business the last few remaining, you know, old school working class institutions in the, you know, and businesses in the East Village, and allowing their takeover by, you know, the yuppie Borg. So anyway, this is a little bit of what I'm going to be ranting about. I suppose I should use the present tense. I'm already ranting about it. I suppose this is what I'm ranting about tonight, isn't it? Yes. Anyway, it was really good to go out there to Jackson Heights and get stuffed on Indian food. What did I have? Chana shag, which is the spinach with fried cheese dish. I think pana chag is the green peas with fried cheese dish, right? Forgive me if I've got my terminology confused here. Whatever it's called, it was really, really good. And I got stuffed for $5 at one of the outdoor stands that they had set up. And I strategically waited until closing time to purchase music when they dropped their prices dramatically. And I picked up five CDs for $1 each. And I don't feel guilty about it because these people are getting radio airplay, right? Once again, Evolution, Bhangra meets Hip Hop from Aman Pabla in collaboration with Pavit Sethi. So I don't know if it was Aman or Pavit who I met who sold me the disc. But a shout-out to you if you're listening tonight, Aman and or Pavit. We'll be playing more of your great music shortly. I'm going to continue my rant after I read a couple of announcements. I do have some announcements, and I would like to get them out of the way while I'm still thinking about them so I don't forget about them, which I am prone to do. I did promise three people that I would make announcements, and there are actually three very, very interesting events which are coming up this week. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to hear a little bit more from Evolution, Bhangra meets Hip Hop, and then I'm going to read some announcements, and then I'm going to continue my rant, and then if we stay on schedule and that brings us to around 1 o'clock in the morning, then we'll hear a little bit more Bhangra meets Hip Hop, and then we'll take your listener phone calls at 212. What's the number again? 209-2900. Have I got that right? 212-209-2900. I think that's the number. Write it down, because if we stay on schedule in approximately 40 minutes, we're going to take your listener phone calls. And this is the question. I seriously want your feedback on this tonight. This is your question, the question which I'm posing to the listeners. Should I move to Peru? Okay? Because the whole time I was in Peru, now I recognize I wasn't living there. I was, you know, traveling and doing journalism and, you know, I mean, it has to be said that I actually did spend an awful lot of time working. You know, it wasn't just, you know, vagabonding around the beautiful places. I did a little bit of that. But really, I was actually spent a lot of computer time in Peru. I really did. In fact, when I sit down and do the math, I spent most of the trip I spent not traveling at all, but sitting in an office in Lima, which was generously made available to me by my hosts. Writing and processing information and doing the same kind of web work that I do in New York City every day. And it was sort of mandated by my deadline cycle that I do that. And in retrospect, it was good because I needed to belt out my deadlines and it was easier to do it in country, you know, in terms of dealing with the follow-up questions and so on. But nonetheless, you know, the whole time I was in Peru, I really felt, I felt happy for the first time in years. I felt genuinely happy and productive. And, yes, a part of it was that I was actually doing journalism, real, firsthand, investigative journalism for the first time in years, as opposed to, you know, bloggery or punditry or whatever it is that we all do on the web these days. Yeah, part of it was that, and a part of it was, you know, the mere novelty of being in another country and traveling around and seeing beautiful places, some of which I did. But it wasn't just that. It's that, and this is really what I'm going to rant about tonight, is that there is still authentic culture in Peru. All right, there's a lot of, you know, evil simulacrum corporate culture too, especially in Lima, and especially in the more, you know, upscale areas of Lima. But there's still, you know, so much real, authentic culture in Peru. Such as, you know, I feel like what I witnessed on 74th Street in Jackson Heights on Sunday was the first authentic, you know, real, authentic, vibrant, happening culture that I've witnessed since I've been back to New York. And everything else is just, you know, this like, you know, it's not New York anymore. It's becoming this Disneyfied simulacrum of its former self. It's becoming New York land. All right, so I'm seriously putting the question to you. Should I, native New Yorker that I am, you know, I've had this love-hate relationship with New York all my life, as all New Yorkers do. But the thing is that the things which I love about New York City are slowly disappearing one by one, you know, year by year, week by week, day by day. And the things which I hate about New York City are growing and proliferating and squeezing out all the good things about the city at a terrifying rate. And, you know, I mean, the Diwali Festival was a good counterexample. I mean, there's something which is growing and thriving. And there wasn't anything like, you know, like that happening, 30 years ago when I lived in Jackson Heights. And now there is. So this is a good thing. You know, this is an example of a counter vortex, as it were, right? Something which is, providing, generating a counter energy to the prevailing downward spiral, a counter spiral to the prevailing downward spiral into, you know, cultural death of New York City. So this is the question which I'm putting to you tonight, and I'll have more to say about this shortly. Should I, you know, abandon New York City and move to Peru? Let's hear a little bit more from Evolution, Bhangra meets Hip Hop. Then announcements. Then I'm going to, you know, rant a little bit more about New York City and why I'm feeling like maybe I'm going to finally abandon it after all these years. And then we'll play a little bit more Bhangra meets Hip Hop. And then we'll take your phone calls at 212-209-2900. So all of you people out there who love the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade can beg me to stay in New York City. Or all of you people out there who hate the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade can beg me to leave. Yes, get out of here, Weinberg. Go to Peru. Okay, let's hear a little bit more from Bhangra meets Hip Hop. Let's hear a little bit something from the, Punjabi Hit Squad. Whoops. Take two.
It's Punjabi Hit Squad. Yeah, ready to roll. Intro.
This is the Mets and the Tricks. You know how we do this, 2K2. Watch how we do. Oh, gosh. Here we go.
Putte jatta de balaon de bakre. Putte jatta de.
like this, bubbly grist.
What?
Ice cold, shoot out the fridge. Oh my gosh, now get it, get a grip. I'm gonna take you on a bad boy trip like this, bubbly grist.
Big shout out to the Punjabi Hit Squad from, once again, Evolution, Bhangra meets Hip Hop. Aman Pabla in collaboration with Pavit Sethi. Is there a label? Looking for a label here. Not seeing a label, but it does say for DJ bookings, contact us at 646-209-1152. 646-209-1152. So, there you go. That's out of reach. Amin Pabla and Pavit Sethi. All right. A couple of events happening this week. This one I'm really looking forward to. This one is going to be fun. Maybe this will even be as much fun as the Diwali celebration was on Sunday. What is Diwali, by the way? Probably a lot of you people know what Diwali is. Those of you who don't, it's the Hindu harvest festival, the festival of lights, which traditionally commemorates the return of Rama to Ayodhya after his victory over the forces of Ravana in the Battle of Lanka. It's kind of like the Hindu Thanksgiving thing, only instead of getting stuffed, you walk around with lights. Like, it's kind of like it's also obviously got some kind of even though it happens more around the fall equinox than around the winter solstice, I think it's got probably something to do with the shortening of the days as well, because you've got the whole lights thing going on, right? Just like Christmas and Hanukkah and all that. So anyway, great time. But this is also going to be a great time. This coming Thursday, October 15th, Time's Up invites you to a pirate radio dance ride. Yes, that's right. They've actually got a, I don't think it's actually pirate, because I think it's actually it's legal. It's because it's like ultra low powered radio. It's got a radius of just like a block or so, but they've actually got it hooked up so that there's one guy riding around on a bicycle with a an antenna on his back, right, sticking up like out of his backpack, broadcasting a really, really great mix of music. I rode with them while they were doing their test run. Whoever did the music, you know, it's coming out of his iPod, actually. And, really, really good selection of music. Very, very eclectic. What did we hear? Oh, we heard a little bit of Toots and the Maytals, a little bit of, Dr. John, a little bit of, David Bowie. Good stuff, good stuff. So, he's actually got it, you know, hooked up so he can broadcast from his bicycle, right? you know, this, the low power frequency, antenna actually hooked up out of his backpack, broadcasting from his iPod while he's riding. And then another one of these, Time's Up engineers, has got a, like this big boombox, on a trailer on the back of his bicycle. So, and what they're asking people to do is to show up with a radio, show up with a portable radio that you can, you know, ride along with on your bicycle or, you know, your skateboard or your rollerblades or whatever. And, you know, you'll all hook it to the same frequency and, it's going to be the, you know, the pirate radio dance ride. They're actually going to like, you know, be, riding along, broadcasting this great music mix, and everybody's going to be picking it up on their local radios. I mean, this is truly revolutionary stuff. These guys are brilliant. I take my hat off to them. So I'm going to be there. You should be there too. They're going to be meeting this Thursday, October 15th, 7 p.m. at Tompkins Square Park. And where are they going to be going? It's going to be going around the East Village for an hour. I guess that's about the size of it, right? So be there at Tompkins Square Park this Thursday, 7 p.m. I'm not going to miss this one. I'm not going to miss this one. What else is going on this week? On the more intellectual tip. Actually, you know, this is not this week. This isn't going to be happening for a while. This is going to be Wednesday, November 4th. This is like, 3 weeks down the line. But I'll announce it now anyway. We'll have the chance to announce it again, but I'm going to announce it now. There is going to be a talk by one Daniel Ankarlu, if I am pronouncing his name correctly, on Swedish socialism, with socialism in quotes. Not what it used to be, but then again, it never was. This is brought to you by the Marxist Humanist Initiative and the New Space, that is not the new school, but the new space, which is the new school for pluralistic anti-capitalist education. And they write, in light of the crisis of neoliberalism that the, quote, financial crisis, unquote, has made apparent, a crisis has made a crisis apparent, but also the impasse of the left, political analysts and activists increasingly turn to Sweden as a socialist example. Once again, socialist in quotes. However, the socialist character of Swedish society is a severely limited one. For the past 20 years or more, Swedish society has been moving steadily in the opposite direction of socialism. In a wave of privatization, retrenchment of social services and social security, flexibilization of labor market relations and increasing inequalities. Furthermore, Swedish socialism, the social policy road to socialism, as they officially term it, was a class collaborationist attempt to achieve socialism within capitalism, unquote, a project that from the outset was bound to fail because of its inner contradictions. From this perspective, the speaker deduces some political implications for the Swedish labor movement and the international left in general. Daniel Ankarlu, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, holds a doctorate in economic history and is a senior lecturer of social policy and social work at Malmo University in Sweden. So this ought to be very interesting. Be there Wednesday, November 4th. So I think it's going to be, 3 weeks from tomorrow, right? At TRS Incorporated, which is at 44 East 32nd Street, up on the 11th floor, contribution requested. If you want more information, you can call the Marxist Human Initiative at 888-579-2245. Giving you time to write it down. Or go to their website, which is MarxistHumanistInitiative.org with the words separated by hyphens. Not underscores, but hyphens. So Marxist-Humanist-Initiative.org. All right, we'll have a chance to announce that again. In case you missed any of that, just watch this spot. We'll get back to you. One more thing. This is happening this week. This is happening this coming Saturday, October 17th. Free Muhammad Othman. Muhammad Othman is a member of the Land Defense Committee at the village of Jayus on the West Bank, who has been imprisoned on some trumped-up charges, probably stemming from one of the ongoing weekly Friday demonstrations which they've been holding at Jayus to try to call to a halt the illegal enclosure of the village's agricultural lands by the apartheid wall, which Israel is building on the West Bank. So there's going to be a protest to free Muhammad Othman Saturday, October 17th at 1 p.m. in front of Levayev, New York, which is the New York City offices of Lev Levayev, who is a diamond merchant, one of the richest men in Israel, and a major funder of the settler movement and all of these, developments which they are building, all these settler developments which they're building on the West Bank, on land which has been illegally seized from Palestinian villages such as Jayus. So be there, give Lev Levayev a piece of your mind this Saturday, October 17th, 1 p.m., and believe it or not, there's no address. Gee, that's just brilliant, isn't it? No address. Which means that I've actually got to go to the Facebook page, and I don't remember my past, this is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Well, let me see. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a Google search, see if we can find it that way. Ridiculous. Just ridiculous. That I've actually got to take time out and do this because nobody can give you the proper information these days because everybody's like, oh, Google it. Google it. Okay, I'll just Google it. I hate the digital world. I just hate it. And I can't even get this stupid computer to roll over and say, Uncle, free Muhammad Othman. Okay, I'm trying to Google it, and the page won't load. Maybe I should go back to some Punjabi music. Oh, you know what I forgot to do? I forgot to give a station break. 10 minutes ago, it was 12:30 in New York City, which means now it's 12:40 in New York City, which means we're hopelessly behind schedule. This is listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. It's 12:40 in the morning. This is the Boris Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg. Here's the Free Muhammad Othman website. freemuhammadothman.wordpress.com. Have we got an address? I'm not seeing an address. This is ridiculous. Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play some more of the Punjabi hip-hop or whatever this stuff is while I look for the address. Google it, Google it. Okay, I'm trying to Google it, and the information's not there. Google it, Google it. Here, let's play some more music. That'll make me feel better.
ਲਓ ਵੀ ਦੋਸਤੋ ਅੱਜ ਦੀ ਲੈਲਾ ਲਈ ਮਜਨੂੰ ਕੀ ਕਹਿੰਦਾ ਸੁਣ ਕੇ ਜਰਾ
Protest against Lavayev and to free Mohammed Othman is going to be Saturday, October 17th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at 700 Madison Avenue between 62nd and 63rd Streets. Okay, you know, heaven forbid they should put this in any obvious place on the web. No, make me dig for it. Anyway, so there you have it. This Saturday, 1 p.m. at Lavayev, New York, 700 Madison Avenue between 62nd and 63rd. Okay. So, all right. Can we talk about food? We already did talk about food. We talked about how I can't get lentils at my local bodega anymore. I did have a... I had a great lunch today at my favorite Mexican place in the city, actually, which is called Calexico, which is on Fifth Avenue in either Park Slope or Borum Hill, depending on how you look at it, because that's really sort of the dividing line between the two. Fifth Avenue is the dividing line between those two neighborhoods. It's right where the grid changes, as a matter of fact. I would say that Calexico is more of a Borum Hill kind of place than a Park Slope kind of place. But it's being squeezed, you know, all around it by the proliferation of these more Park Slope kind of places. You know, the thing is, when I was in Peru, the food was so good. And so cheap. I'm getting a somewhat, you know, good exchange rate on the dollar, although, you know, not as good as, a couple of years ago, because the dollar is really slipping. But even, you know, by Peruvian standards, you know, I could get in the market in Lima, a great breakfast of rice, beans and fried fish, which was exactly what I had for lunch at the Calexico on Fifth Avenue today, four soles, which is around $1.50, and so good, and you know, just cooked home style right in front of you, and you know, just presented with no frills, just like a real sort of family atmosphere in the little comedores in the the food stalls in the markets. I would be so happy if I could get that in New York City. So I'm very, very grateful that that Calexico is still around. Now, admittedly, I paid well more than $1.50 for my excellent filete de mojarra con salsa verde at Calexico. But still very, very reasonably priced, especially by contemporary New York City standards. And contrary to the name, you'd think, you know, Calexico is kind of like, you know, Calmex, but it's not. It's real, authentic, deep Mex, as it were. Filete de mojarra con salsa verde that I had was not Calmex by any stretch of the imagination. That was real, authentic, you know, deep Mexican cuisine. And really, really good. And I'm so glad that the place is still around. But what worries me is, like, every time I leave New York and I come back, and I still maintain a mail drop, on Fifth Avenue in the Slope, because, you know, I lived there, before I moved to, the East Village 20 years ago. That's where I lived. And I maintained the mail drop. I don't mind biking out there, once, every 10 days or so, and, getting a little exercise, going over the Brooklyn Bridge, getting some fresh air, and, getting some fried mojarra, which is tilapia, at the Calexico. One of the things I do, which keep me reasonably happy. And in addition to which, what they're charging me for the mail drop on Fifth Avenue in the Slope is much, much, much less than I would pay in the East Village. Although probably a little bit more expensive than I would pay in Chinatown. That is to say in Manhattan's Chinatown. Because there's also a Brooklyn Chinatown. If you keep going on Fifth Avenue, you come to Sunset Park. Actually, Fifth Avenue in Sunset Park is the Mexican drag. And I believe it's 7th or 8th Avenue in Sunset Park. You Sunset Park people would know better than me, which is the Brooklyn Chinatown. So, but anyway, I digress. Every time I leave New York for a while and come back, I'm so glad to find that that the Calexico is still there, because I'm really, really worried about its survival. Now, you know, toca madera, knock on wood, ojalá, the Calexico is going to be around for a while. I don't want to jinx it. But I have to say, here's something which worries me. Okay, well, the first thing which worries me is that all of the other, ethnic old-school type eateries around there have either closed and been replaced by, you know, upscale yuppie joints of exactly the same kind which are proliferating in my neighborhood in the East Village, although probably the ones in Park Slope are probably not quite as expensive and not quite as much of a mob scene, but still same basic tendency which is going on. Or they close and reopen after a makeover and they've gone upscale while still, you know, being like a basic, you know, ethnic eatery, like all of the East European, Polish, Ukrainian places in the East Village, you know, have sort of done this. They've either been squeezed out and closed, or, you know, they close for a while and do a makeover and reopen selling arugula pierogies. And I kid you not, I have actually seen arugula pierogies on the menu at one of these joints. You know, I actually said that on the radio as a joke once, and then lo and behold, I actually saw it. So talk about life imitating art. So that also happened to a couple of the places, the old Latino places, as opposed to East European places, on Fifth Avenue in the Slope. But Calexico is still real, old school, authentic, reasonably priced kind of place. And this is, you know, this is the point. The food is better at the reasonably priced places. Much better. Okay? And in fact, the great fried fish with rice and beans that I had for breakfast, for four soles, which was around $1.50 in Lima, it was one of the best breakfasts I've had, you know, well, I shouldn't say in years because I could get that, you know, for breakfast every morning in Peru. But, you can't get a great breakfast like that in New York anymore. And in fact, you know, in New York, you'll pay, $10 or more at these proliferating yuppie joints for, less good, less filling food, right? You know, for some fried eggs, not even with, rice and beans or hash browns or something that you're supposed to eat with fried eggs, but, you know, for a little bit of, you know, greens on the side, you know, for just like a few leaves of arugula with your fried eggs. So, you know, the more you pay, the worse the food is. This is axiomatic, okay? I'm sorry. There are a few exceptions here and there, but generally the cheaper the joint, the better the food, until of course you arrive at the fast food. And of course that, I don't even consider that to be food. I consider fast food restaurants to be a contradiction in terms. You know, the corporate chains, right? You know, the McDonald's, Burger King, Starbucks, Taco Hell, etc. I don't consider them to be restaurants, and I don't consider that stuff to be food. And I don't eat it. So, and that's what's, you know, both of these are proliferating. The overpriced, pretentious, you know, arugula-centric yuppie joints are proliferating, and the corporate fast food, pseudo food joints, pseudo restaurants are proliferating, and it's the middle which is being squeezed out. You know, the authentic, you know, community rooted, ethnic working class eateries that actually have good food at a reasonable price, those are what's being squeezed out. So I sure do hope that the Calexico sticks around for a while. So a big shout out to my buds at Calexico. And what really makes me worry is that I went onto the web. I went onto Google Maps to try to see if I could find Calexico with their Street View thing to double check the address. And indeed, by the way, it's at the corner of Prospect Place and Fifth Avenue. And I was alarmed to find that if you click on that block on Google Maps, all of the upscale yuppie joints which have proliferated around Calexico are all listed by name on Google Maps. There's like this little bubble which is floating over the image of the building with the restaurant with, you know, the name of the business establishment, and you can click on it and go to their website and so on. Whereas, you know, of course, Calexico doesn't have a website, so there's nothing to click on there. So Calexico doesn't exist in cyberspace, quote unquote. All right. It's not there on Google Maps unless you actually go to Street View and actually look at the actual, you know, image of it, the actual photographic image of it. But in terms of, you know, a little bubble floating over it, giving the name of the restaurant and so on, it doesn't exist. And, if something doesn't exist in cyberspace, then, you know, maybe it's not long for the real world. I hope that's not the case. I really, really hope that that's not the case. But that's my fear. And, you know, the markets throughout Peru, as throughout Latin America, are just, they're where you go for real good food, for a real good price, and also for, you know, real authentic culture. That's as authentic as it gets, okay? And once again, my fear is that even in Peru, you know, maybe the markets are not long for this world. Maybe, you know, a generation down the line, there aren't going to be, you know, those public markets in Peru and in Mexico and Colombia and elsewhere in Latin America anymore. And, you know, everybody's going to be, you know, buying their rice and beans at the Pathmark or wherever, you know, after they've been completely colonized by U.S. gastro-imperialism under the free trade agreements and so on. But in any event, authentic culture has certainly got a much, much, much longer lease on life in Peru than it does in New York City. I feel like we're just witnessing the very, very last gasps of it here in New York City. So that's one thing I wanted to rant about. I should say, before it gets any later, that it's mere seconds of 1 o'clock in the morning, and listener-supported, non-commercial, listener-supported, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. The name of this show is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg. We're behind schedule, but maybe for the last 20 minutes instead of the last 30 minutes, we'll take your listener phone calls on the question of whether I should move to Peru at 212-209-2900. Not now, but in 10 minutes. I think I have at least 10 minutes more of ranting to do, if I can limit myself to 10 minutes, because there's still a few more things I want to get off my chest. By the way, on the subject of the free trade order in Peru and resistance to it, the first journalistic fruits of my trip to Peru are now online in the publication Indian Country Today. You can go to their website, which is IndianCountryToday.com. And it's the top story in the global section, Truth Commission on Amazon Massacre Established. So you can read it there. Just go to IndianCountryToday.com and click on Truth Commission on Amazon Massacre Established. And I should note, by the way, that the research for this article was provided by the Investigative Fund at the Nation Institute. So a big shout out to my good friends at the Nation Institute who facilitated the research and facilitated my travel in Peru. I am very, very grateful to you. Once again, check out my story at IndianCountryToday.com. Okay. As I mentioned last week, there were recently transit fare hikes in Lima, and there was a general strike to protest this. They actually shut down the city for a day. And as I also said, it was not just, you know, looking at the issue of the transit fares going up in isolation, but actually making the larger political connections. And actually, they adopted among their demands those of the indigenous peoples protesting in the Amazon, which is what my story in Indian Country Today is about. Expressed their, you know, solidarity between these two struggles, you know, that of, you know, urban workers trying to get to their jobs in the morning in Lima, and that of indigenous peoples attempting to protect their lands in the rainforest of the Amazon. You know, they actually made common cause against what they perceived to be the common enemy of the Garcia administration and the free trade order and so on. So, very, very politically advanced, very, very politically sophisticated. Very, very inspiring. Gives me a lot of hope. If not for the world, then for Peru, at least. You know, I note that here in New York City, we also just had a transit fare hike, right? It now costs $2.25. Just as I was getting used to $2, I'm figuring, oh, God, well, at least it's a nice round number. It makes the math nice and easy. And then they go ahead and they raise it to $2.25 for, you know, the privilege of having to, like, you know, wait for, you know, the N train. So what really irks me about it is not only that this went down with hardly a peep of protest. You know, maybe the strap hangers campaign did a press release, but general strike? No, I don't think so. But what really irks me is that as this is happening, they are actually phasing out the token clerks, or the station attendants, or whatever they call them, the people in the token booths. More and more, the system is becoming completely automated, and there isn't anybody there. And they're actually unveiling these so-called robo-trains, which haven't got any, which haven't got either a train operator or, on some of the lines now, I understand, they're actually going to actually phase out the conductors as well. So there's going to be nobody on board the train except for the passengers. And I'm sure eventually the passengers will be replaced by robots as well. And it's going to be robot operating trains taking robots to work. I mean, in 25 years, there's no doubt that's what we're going to see. For the moment, the passengers are still human beings. But they've actually unveiled, they're working on these complete robo trains, which are completely automated. And I understand that, from here, this is from the Park Slope Courier. I understand that a bill has been introduced into the assembly by Joseph Lentol of Brooklyn to ban the robo trains, at least on lines that go underwater, because I guess this is supposed to be more dangerous or something. But I don't know. They should be banned entirely, is what I say. And what's particularly irksome about it is that, you know, they're actually getting rid of, you know, the last vestiges of a human face at the MTA at the same time that there is this, you know, saturation propaganda throughout the subway system of, if you see something, say something. Well, who are you supposed to say something to if there's nobody there? If there's nobody in the token booth, who are you supposed to say something to? So, you know, this is the face of totalitarianism in the form of the corporate security state, where it paradoxically and counterintuitively coexists with the outward forms of, you know, formalistic bourgeois democracy. So, you know, it's become a patriotic duty for us to be completely paranoid all the time and to suspect all of our, you know, fellow strap hangers of being terrorists. And at the same time, there isn't even anybody to rat them out to because the system is becoming completely automated and there's no human beings anywhere in sight. apart from your fellow strap hangers. And as I say, it's just a matter of time. They'll be replaced with robots, too, if things keep going in the general trajectory of our civilization. Yeah, very bad, very bad. You know, the last vestiges of a human face disappearing from the MTA at the same time that we're being, you know, there's all this, you know, saturation propaganda to, like, you know, rat out your fellow strap hanger. You know, I suppose, once again, the silver lining on the cloud is that there isn't anybody to rat him out to anymore. So, did you also happen to note that there was a, here, let's see if I can find this. Yeah, there was, a to-do about the so-called sound cannon, which was used, or audio cannon, which was used against the protesters at the G20 affair in Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago. This is apparently a device known as the Long Range Acoustic Device, or LRAD, which produces this brain-frying screech to disperse protesters. It was also a big stink that this was used against protesters in this exact same device, the LRAD, that was used in Pittsburgh, was also used against the against protesters in Honduras outside the Brazilian embassy, where Zelaya has taken refuge. So, once again, you know, the same police state which is unfolding in Latin America, you know, in Honduras, where there's actually been a, you know, a real old-fashioned coup d'etat, the same tactics are being used against us here in New York City. And, of course, we all know that some of our anarchist comrades from Queens were busted for tweeting. Elliot Madison was busted at the G20 protest for tweeting, you know, tweeting what? Tweeting police positions to fellow protesters, apparently, is what he was busted for. I would like to know why this is a crime, you know? It's just information, right? Information wants to be free and all that. So, let's see. I suppose I should rant about this briefly. A part of what contributes to the surreal nature of this is the fact that we've got President Obama now, and he just won the Nobel Peace Prize. I have to say that, I know a lot of you people out there are going to disagree with me, but to me, there's something which is just downright Orwellian about Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize on the same day that he convenes his war council at the White House Situation Room to discuss the escalation of the Afghanistan campaign. You know, and Obama is waging two wars. I mean, he inherited them from the other guy, but he's still waging two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and apparently escalating the one in Afghanistan, gets the Nobel Peace Prize. And there's something about this which doesn't quite compute, you know what I'm saying? I sort of understand the logic behind. I mean, I was talking to one of my fellow producers here who said that, you know, Obama's election has ratcheted down global tensions by around 40%. And I have to agree with that. It's, you know, it's true. And I recognize that, you know, his speech at Cairo and reaching out to the Muslim world and his call for a nuclear free world and retreating somewhat, it seems, from the new Euro missiles that the Bush administration had slated to put into the Czech Republic and Poland. You know, these are good things. These are steps in the right direction, but still there's just something Orwellian about it, you know. It's normalizing the state of permanent war to be giving the Nobel Peace Prize to, you know, somebody who's waging two wars simultaneously at the moment that he gets the prize. Okay, it's just something which is just sort of fundamentally wrong about it. I know I let it slip on these airwaves that I did in fact vote for the guy. I feel that I need to make clear why I did, and that I have to make it clear especially that I did with my eyes open, okay? Not with my eyes closed, not with any illusions. I really feel that if Palin McCain had been elected, we really would have been going over the edge into something really, really akin to fascism. Not just, you know, the sort of corporate security state, which is sinister enough, which we're actually living in, but going over the edge into something more akin to overt fascism if Palin McCain had been elected. And I anticipated, being my usual optimistic self, thank goodness I was wrong, but I anticipated that it was going to be a contested election. And, as it had been the last two times around, right? And there were going to be, shenanigans at the polls, and it was going to be contested by both sides. And in that case, I wanted Obama to have the biggest possible popular mandate to, give him more of an ironclad case that he should, in fact, be the president, regardless of any, diebold conspiracy stuff that might have taken place. Right. So, I don't regret voting for Obama, even though I'm not in a swing state and he was going to take New York anyway. I wanted to have him to have the biggest possible popular mandate just in case just to make a moral point for him to have the moral high ground in case the election was contested. So that's why I voted for him. That was my logic in voting for him. And I don't regret it because, all of my, ranting about, the insidious police state, which is unfolding, we'd have much, much, much bigger problems. I wouldn't be ranting about that if the other guys had gotten elected, because it wouldn't be an insidious police state. It would be a very, very overt police state. Now, you can argue that using the LRAD in Pittsburgh is pretty damn overt, and I would agree with you. But believe me, if the other guys had been elected, we'd be too busy, protesting the bombardment of Iran and protesting far more overt police state, domestic police state stuff going on. We'd be too busy protesting, that to even be worrying about the other stuff which I'm ranting about tonight. Like cell phones, for instance. Another thing which I just read in the Park Slope Courier, city council member Vincent Gentile last week introduced legislation that would require the city's Department of Buildings, which issues permits for the antenna, the cell phone's antenna, which are proliferating all over the city on rooftops, once again, like mushrooms after the rain. It would require the city's Department of Buildings, which issues the permits for the antenna, to monitor the radio frequency radiation emitted from the cell phone antenna in the city every 6 months, reporting on those whose emissions exceed federal guidelines. No, you think? Why are they only now getting around to introducing this legislation? After the worst of it is done and we're already immersed in this sea of microwave pollution. More to the point, did anybody ask me? I don't remember being polled about whether I wanted, landlines to be phased out and for everybody to have cell phones and for it to be practically mandatory for people to have cell phones. Nobody asked me. Is this a democracy? Apparently, it was the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, which gave broad latitude to the cell phone companies, which has hamstrung activists in their efforts to address the potential health effects of the installations. So, nobody asked me. Now, I have to say that cell phones are also quite ubiquitous in Peru. And in fact, I'm sure that there must be far more cell phones than landlines in the country, without a doubt. It's sort of a different culture about them. People actually use them to communicate, as opposed to, people just live on their goddamn cell phones, which is, the culture here in New York City. where, you know, people just walk down the street and don't pay any attention to what's going around them in their actual physical environment anymore because we're too busy gabbing away on their cell phones and, you know, poking away at their iPods and their other little communications gadgets. And you know, that is not going on in Peru. People don't walk down the street gabbing into their cell phones. There's actually still, you know, thriving street culture happening in Lima, which is not happening here in New York. And it just makes me feel extremely alienated to walk down the street and everybody is just gabbing away into their cell phones. Now, we're almost out of time. So I guess, I don't know, we're going to, maybe we'll take, 10 minutes of phone calls. Because there's one last thing which I have to rant about, which, okay, I'm going to try to keep it just to 4 minutes, which is what we've got left before 1:20 in the morning. And then maybe we'll take phone calls for 10 minutes. But the last thing which I have to rant about is WBAI. And I have to say that, you know, that one of the few things which keeps me in New York City is WBAI, that and my rent control apartment, the proverbial golden handcuffs, because if I ever gave it up, I'd never be able to get it again. But BAI is one of the few things which really keeps me in New York City. And, you know, I have to say that, you know, even though some people are optimistic, and think that BAI has sort of come back from the brink and is moving in the right direction now, you know, I warned, you heard it here first, okay? I warned months ago that the, direction that the, you know, this pathological dynamic at the board meetings was moving towards was one of actual physical violence, actual physical confrontation. And lo and behold, it actually happened. There was a board meeting in my absence where it actually did turn into a physical Donnybrook, and two people were apparently injured. I don't think that they were seriously injured, but they, you know, were slightly injured. And, you know, this really doesn't look good, guys. It really, really doesn't. This is supposed to be your Peace and Justice radio station. This is the Pacifica Network, founded by pacifists. And, you know, we're literally having, you know, physical altercations at our board meetings. You heard it here first. I warned months ago that it was heading in this direction. At least it was weeks ago, before, you know, this actual physical Donnybrook happened. I warned that that's what it was escalating towards. But does anybody listen to me? No. Nobody listens to Weinberg. Weinberg's a coward. Weinberg's a traitor because he calls out both sides in this extremely destructive dynamic, which is tearing apart the station. And, you know, all anybody ever tells me is, oh, it's the other side. We're not to blame. It's the other side. They started it. I hear that same line from both sides. And I'm sorry. You know, it takes two to tango. And both sides have been trying to shout down each other. And I don't see, you know, what they hope to get from this other than the actual destruction of the station. The self-destruction of the station. We can't even blame anybody else. You know, last time around during the, you know, the Christmas coup, you could actually blame corporate America. You know, it was a corporate coup against free speech and all that. You know, I don't see it this time. It just looks like, you know, we can't get along with each other and, you know, we're destroying the station through our own idiocy. It's self-destruction this time around. That's the real tragedy of it. And I don't see, you know, what the logic of this whole, you know, shout down the other side is unless you actually want to provoke a physical confrontation so that you can, you know, blame the other side and get law enforcement involved and have somebody on your side get physically hurt so you can play the martyr. I mean, is that really the way we want to do things here? BAI and the Pacifica Network were founded, okay, founded on the notion that there should be open dialogue to resolve differences in the world. It was founded as, you know, the notion of radio as an alternative to war. That was actually the founding doctrine and ideology of the Pacifica Network. You know, talking things out over the public airwaves as an alternative to physical violence. And now we're having physical violence at our board meetings? Okay. In addition to which, as you just heard at the top of the show, the elections appear to be the usual shambles. The ballots are not being sent out reliably, apparently. I'm only speaking from experience because I haven't received mine. Where's my ballot? Hello, I want to vote in the election. I haven't received my ballot. Where's my ballot? Okay. I also note, unfortunately, it really pains me. It pains me deeply to have to say this. This is not something which I am saying lightly, but I really feel the need to say this. I am hearing from listeners who have pledged to BAI for this radio show in the past that they have still not received their premiums. Even, you know, the BAI t-shirt, which seems like the most basic of the premiums, right? You know, there isn't any complicated production efforts which have to go into it or anything. You know, you just, the t-shirts are printed up, send them out, right? Still haven't received their premiums. And next week, I am going to be asked to go back onto the airwaves and to, you know, ask the listeners, make a heartfelt plea, because believe me, it really is a heartfelt plea. I believe, you know, apart from the premiums, you have a responsibility to support WBAI, as I do, okay? I give of my hard-earned money once a year to support WBAI, and you should too. But I'm going to be asked to, you know, go on the airwaves once again, and this is the thing that really irks me, is that instead of making the heartfelt plea, or at least in addition to making the heartfelt plea to support BAI, because, you know, you should support BAI, you know, there's this whole sort of premium-centric hard sell which is going on in terms of, you know, getting people to pledge, and then the premiums don't even go out reliably. I mean, I hate to have to, you know, air this dirty laundry on the air, but I utterly feel that I have a responsibility to do so because, you know, I have to be honest with the listeners. It's a fundamental principle here, and it's about free speech. I have to be honest with the listeners. And I have tried again and again and again to address this problem through the appropriate channels, and I am still hearing from listeners that they're not getting their premiums. So, and one more thing I'll say in terms of why you should support WBAI is that, you know, the equipment here literally is falling apart, and I will particularly speak of the cassette deck here in Master Control. Now, I know I'm one of the last few dinosaurs on the planet who still actually uses a cassette player. But nonetheless, if we are going to have a cassette player in Master Control, and actually, you know, have the pretense of being able to use cassettes, to, you know, play over the air or to record the show with, it should work. And the one here does not work. I am literally holding the knobs down with masking tape. This is not a joke. This is real. I am literally holding the knobs down with masking tape in order for it to work and for the needles to register and for my show to be recorded. Literally masking tape. So, you know, pay your pledge. We need make a pledge next week, despite the fact that you may not get your premium. Make your pledge next week to support WBAI because we need your money. And whoever out there is responsible for seeing that the cassette deck works, you know, it would be nice if the cassette deck worked. Okay, that's all I have to say. And we don't have time for phone calls. Sorry, maybe next week. If anybody really, really, really has something they need to get off their chest, 212-631-1115 is my voicemail. Leave a message there. 212-631-1115. You know what? Next week, I'm going to, assuming that I have not been, I am not going to be yanked from the airwaves for some egregious protocol violation in airing WBAI's Dirty Laundry tonight, as I have, I'm going to be on the air next week, hitting you up for your hard-earned money. And I'll tell you what, we're going to, I pledge this, okay? We're going to do the usual BAI routine that I do during the pledges, where if we meet a certain goal, let's call it $1,000. If we meet $1,000 by 1 o'clock in the morning, Then for the remaining half hour, I'll take listener phone calls, and all of you can who didn't get to call in tonight can call in and have your say about the situation here at BAI, and can tell me whether I should stay in New York or move to Peru and abandon the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Maybe Anne-Marie Hendrickson will be willing to take over and keep the show alive. I certainly do hope so, if I decide to actually do that. But I'll tell you, I'm seeing less and less reason every minute to stick around New York City. And I'm telling you this, you know, I've always said that if we lose Katz's Delicatessen or WBAI, I'm leaving town. So all of you people who want me to stay, make a pledge to WBAI if you want me to stay. Because if BAI goes down, I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here. There's not going to be anything left to fight for in New York City if we lose either WBAI or Katz's Delicatessen. All right, let's hear a little bit more of authentic New York City culture. Enjoy it while you can. From, once again, the record, or CD, Evolution, Bhangra Meets Hip Hop, from Aman Pabla, in collaboration with Pavit Sethi, straight out of Queens, straight out of Jackson Heights. If you want to reach them for DJ bookings, contact them at 646-209-1152. See you on the radio next week if I haven't been unceremoniously yanked from the airwaves for violating the gag rule. By the way, I don't believe that there is a gag rule, and the fact that I've gotten away with saying as much as I've said is evidence. So we'll find out for sure next week if, in fact, there's a gag rule. Hopefully not. Hopefully I will be on the air next week whining and pleading and wheedling for you to give up your money for listener-supported, non-commercial. Enjoy it while you can. Use it or lose it. WBAI, 99.5 FM here in New York City, La Manzana Grande. Stay tuned for Weaponry with Tom Whisker coming up next. See you next week. Ojalá and salam aleikum.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.